need to record again. Hold on. Okay.
Wow.
Now I'm recording. Are you ready?
Oh, is it me? Am I the one that's lagging behind today?
Am I the drama?
Is it moi?
Yeah.
Am I the problem in this team this morning? Me?
Always. You're both the problem and the solution. You're the paradox of the podcast.
I'm the whole problem. So, Heather, how are you? Do you have anything to wanna, have you been reading any good books lately that we haven't already been talking about for 20 minutes?
It hasn't been 20 minutes, but I'm reading about my bestie Markeon.
Oh, is he Markeon now?
Oh, he's Markeon now.
Didn't you tell me that there was some sort of canon reason that has been invented for the difference in the pronunciations of that character's name in the audiobooks?
No, it came from I would actually honestly have to ask my bestie Charles about it, but
from Gold Squadron Gaze, that Charles?
Yeah. I believe there was a panel at one point where somebody asked the question, so which is it, Markeon or Markeon? And the authors did not agree. They started arguing. and so they realized when he achieves like hyper super villain mode, he does the name change. And that's the head.
Sure.
It's more like headcanon.
Yeah, that sounds like fan theory.
Yeah.
To sort of hand wave away the inconsistencies in the audiobook narration.
Yeah.
And you know what? We've done worse for bigger problems in the Star War. So,
oh yeah, yeah.
I ain't mad at it.
Now, our patron Wes, who's watching our live recording, and just posted in the chat. I'm pretty sure it was Mark Thompson's mistake that got corrected. No, it was not. He was instructed to pronounce his name like that because he did it for two books.
That's a lot of editing. That's a lot of production. That's a lot of sitting in a booth and damn well hearing that name being pronounced that way.
Yeah, because look, like, how did he know how to pronounce Iram and Arano? Or pronounce? See, I can't even pronounce. How did he know that? Because he was, they go over all this stuff in detail, and it's...
And I've done very, very brief, like, audiobook text narration. If you get a word pronounced wrong, they don't want you to re-record the whole thing because it's a lot. They will just make you go back and do pickups.
Right.
Where you hear how you said the word the first time, and then you try and duplicate that inflection, but with the correct pronunciation. It's a pain in the ass. So it could be that after the first book, they were like, fuck, he said it wrong. Oh, well, we didn't stop him, and that's 900 hours of audio that we don't want to make him go back through, and we don't want to pay, for another 5 or 6 hours of pickups that he's going to have to record. So they just went with it. That could be what happened. But
right.
Somebody in production should have caught that.
Well, I'm thinking if the creative council of this project didn't agree, then how are you going to...
Right. You can't even get the people who wrote his name down over and over to agree on how it's pronounced, then.
The thing is that, and this is no offense to anybody with the name, I think Markeon sounds cooler than Markeon, because it's Mark. Why wouldn't I just call Markeon Mark? Be like, hi, Mark.
It's like, well, because he'd kill you. But also,
oh, that's true. He'd break my neck.
It's like the mom from Light of the Jedi named Erica. Like, can we... Can we space it up just a little bit? Can we space fantasy high opera this name up just a tiny bit? Please, because that was just Erica. Like, you didn't even swap out the K for a Q or something. Like, just Erica.
I can't remember if it was a Star Wars book or a Star Trek book, but there was a character named Tiffany, and it was spelled like Tiffany.
Nice.
And I'm like, okay.
That's incorrect. Don't do that.
Yeah.
How dare you?
Yeah.
How dare you? And it's not like the internet is not teeming with sci-fi fantasy name generators.
Don't I know it?
Right.
Thank
because
God.
Because running tabletop games, baby. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, as somebody that likes to run games, having a player, like, describing a scene, be like, there's people everywhere, and the player's suddenly like, I talked to this random NPC you have no intention of role-playing or coming up with. I'm like, oh, okay. Name generator, character generator, boom.
Yeah.
You have Carl the Dwarf.
and you don't want to broadcast that they just jumped on an NPC that doesn't mean anything, because maybe you'll make that NPC mean something later. So you don't want to be like, that's Bob.
Right. Right.
I guess. Bob has nothing interesting to say, because then they will fixate on Bob. They will adopt Bob. They will name all of their firstborn children Bob. Bob will become their favorite NPC. God damn it.
I don't know. For some reason, Bob, the word Bob, the name Bob, is an acceptable name in all...
Yeah, it depends on what vowels you use for the ah sound.
Bob.
Maybe it's an A-H, an A-U.
Yeah.
Yeah, you never know. Okay, anyway, hey, do you want to intro a show today?
Let's do it.
Instead of just chit-chatting and geeking out about shit, let's chit-chat and geek out about what we came here to do that about. I'm going to intro now. Are you ready? I'm ready.
I'm ready.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Dark Side Divas, the podcast where a woman and a gay man express their opinions about Star Wars. My name is Stephanie. I'm the woman half of the show. My name is not Bob.
That's
much more interesting.
That's
than Bob.
That's it.
They can't all be winners, bitch. Who are you?
Hey, everybody. I'm Chris. I am that homo. Can we please get the fuck off the station? Sexual. And Stephanie?
God damn it. Hmm.
That little thing is sturdier than she looks.
Which is a good thing, because... Yeah, god damn it. Look, I cannot finish this thought, because she's talking about a presumably teenage girl who I'm pretty sure is actually a 30-year-old serial killer.
So. Steph, you may have noticed Calvin from... our bestie Calvin from chat has... just showed up to our live recording, because if you join our Patreon, patreon.com/divaspodcast, $5 a month, you can watch our live recording. He just finished...
Good promo, Heather.
He just finished Eye of Darkness, which, as of this recording, that book came out this week, actually, specifically 2 days ago.
Uh-huh.
And not only have I... I've read it twice. So many people I know... have taken this book and chewed it up and have already finished reading it, because you can't stop once you start it. And this is the High Republic at its best, and I'm so happy that Star Wars books are a thing.
Star Wars books are amazing, but I don't always have, we were talking about this earlier, the emotional stamina it takes. Because we've talked about this, how characters in books seem a lot more yours. Seem a lot closer to your heart, because you don't have like another person portraying them on the screen, or a group of finely crafted pixels that have created this character for you to gaze upon. That character came to life inside your head, right? And so you love them. I love them on a deeper level. Book characters on a deeper level than film and TV characters. So High Republic books, it's still a Star Wars, and it's still doing heinous shit to its characters.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a lot. It's a lot to deal with. And it's just a lot of emotion to process, to watch a character who was birthed into existence behind my eyes go through some shit. And we're going to talk about it today. So you know what I've been doing in between reading these books?
Taking shots.
I have been reading... completely insane, ridiculous, stupid erotica.
Oh.
Ice Planet Barbarians, Chris. Are you familiar?
Tell me more.
With Ruby Dixon's Ice Planet Barbarians?
I've heard the name Ruby Dixon before. And that's a great name for an erotic author,
right?
By the way.
Yeah. Right? Oh my god. These books are dumb. They're awful. I can't stop reading them, because they have all the emotional depth of a petri dish. They're so, and every one of them follows the same format, you know, human women stranded on ice planet, obviously, and there are barbarians that live there. Are you following the plot so far? But these barbarians abso-fucking-lutely adore these women and have all the sex with them. And it's so fun to read, and it's so dumb, and it doesn't matter if anything happens to any of these characters, because I'm not emotionally attached to them. I just want to watch them bang in an ice cave. That's it.
That's awesome.
And so that's been my palate cleanser in between sections of
this
book.
That's a hell of a palate cleanser.
Oh, yeah.
So you may recall,
it's a good time.
You may recall on our Baldur's Gate,
live stream,
I guess that you want to call it. I announced that I could not find any D&D porn, right.
Uh-huh.
Now that's still the case, but many of our listeners found something recent too, Magic the Gathering porn. And I have to,
I have to
say something.
Please.
Magic the Gathering is not the same thing as D&D.
It's really not. It's a fucking card game, y'all.
Yeah.
It is not D&D. There's no role play. Trust me, I know. Because my husband, big Magic the Gathering player.
Right.
Okay? From way back. And so early in our relationship, I was like, I need to be able to talk to this idiot, so let's fucking learn how to play Magic the Gathering. And I did, and I learned, and I built decks around a character concept of like a crazed wizard in the mountain and stuff like that. And I brought that shit to the table. And you know who doesn't appreciate when you make role play based decisions that are counter to strategy based decisions in a Magic the Gathering game? Other Magic the Gathering players.
Right.
They don't appreciate that shit at all. They feel clowned and they want you the fuck off their table.
Yeah. And I do like how Magic the Gathering players let me know that they're ready by turning me on their side.
You were waiting for me to finish talking so you could do that.
No, actually, honestly, this popped in my head.
Yeah, that joke queued up for days.
No, I didn't. No, I swear. It just popped in my head. I'm just that demented. Anyway,
so Magic, you know what? Please do not describe on this recording what Magic the Gathering porn is like.
Oh, no.
Save it for the live stream we're doing tomorrow night.
No, two guys are playing Magic the Gathering, and they're like, bro, we can't go outside. What are we going to do?
A ghost.
Yeah, exactly.
Obviously.
Yeah. What?
God, I love porn premises.
Yeah, pretty much. And you know what? I'm not looking for people to get dressed up like fucking LARPers and start baning. Like,
I am.
Oh.
I demand quality costumes.
Girl, well, okay. Hold on. This is like sex on a beach.
What?
Okay, hold on. Go with me on this, right?
Are you talking to me like maybe I haven't had sex in garb?
I'm talking to our listeners right now. Okay. I know for a fact you have, unfortunately.
Thank you.
But
I have children because of it, so.
I'm just saying, cosplayers like body paint, glitter, wigs, accessories, these are all things that generally I am not a fan of when it's sexy time.
Well, no, you got to pick and choose, because like you cannot bump up with somebody who has glitter on, because you will have glitter on. And well, I mean, if you're comfortable with that, if you don't mind finding sparkly bits for literally months
or years
after, then go for it.
My glittered for a year.
I love it when I know the moment that I'm going to cut out of the show. Just as it happens.
I didn't use any vulgar language. I used the scientific terms. What?
Uh-huh. Hey, I do actually have something related to the book that we're here to talk about today. To talk about before we get into it. Do you have any like official podcast business you want to discuss?
No.
Okay. So, all right, real quick before we get into why we're here today, y'all. Last time, I expressed that I was having difficulty mentally casting Des Ryden in my head, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I had a vague image of this Hottie McHotpants, like, smiling, charismatic guy, but I didn't have, like, an actor that I could put into my brain to play that role. And so I put out a call. Could somebody please... If anybody has any suggestions, and we had somebody come through on Twitter with this fucking brilliant suggestion. Are you ready for this?
Okay.
Cast your mind back to like 2009, 2010.
Okay.
You remember the show Friday Night Lights?
Yeah.
There was a young up-and-coming actor on that show by the name of Michael B. Jordan. So this is early 20s Michael B. Jordan. He's a young man.
He's
with a smile bright as the sun, fit, but not with all the Creed muscle that he'll put on later in life, you know? That guy. That is my Des Ryden, 100%. And it was so helpful to get that mental image solidified in my mind before reading these chapters. Thanks for that.
Well, you can cast Michael B. Jordan and Pile of Sand.
Fuck you. There wasn't even sand left. Okay, you know what? Let's get into it. So what we're doing on this podcast is we are watching through the entire Star Wars visual story in chronological order. However, we got a little side project going right now that we started because we were standing in solidarity with the strikes, where we are reading through High Republic books, specifically Into the Dark from the High Republic. Today, we are talking about chapters 10, 11, and Flashback Part 3.
Oh, God damn it.
Fucking Flashback. Christopher, do you have an intro?
Okay, I can't believe I'm going to do this. Stephanie Unleashed. Sometime ago, Chris receives angry messages from his bestie, who is in a state of pure rage. What events of Into the Dark triggered the wrath of one of the Dark Side divas? Let's find out.
Why you gotta call me out like that? Oh my God.
Y'all, I'm having a series of very important and productive meetings, but it like drained my soul because I'm an introvert, so I'm having to talk to people, and that's very draining. And all of a sudden, my chat is exploding with rage. Like, I could feel the anger come out of my phone, and I'm like,
I broke the fucking caps lock key off on this shit.
She did. So mad. Anyway, Stephanie wasn't happy.
We'll get to it. Okay, so previously on Aliens, Event Horizon, throw a dart at a list of every episode of Star Trek, Stargate, Farscape, or The Expanse, etc., and you're going to hit this story.
Right.
And that's not shade. I legitimately love the sci-fi horror genre. This trope will never get old for me, ever. But that's where we're at.
Yeah.
Like, we've seen this story before, and that's why it's so painful to watch this unfold. Anyway.
Side note, one of our patrons asked how many chapters are in the book, and that's, I don't know, because the audiobook format is fucked up. Like, Stephanie just said we're going to do two chapters and a flashback. You can't find me the flashback part in the audiobook version. You can't just go to it.
Because they just combine it with chapter 11.
They nest it with the book, yeah.
Nice. We've got a long way to go. And I've said that we're taking this in smaller bites because life is lifing pretty hard these days. And so I can't do a lot of content. So it may take us a while to get through this book, and that's okay. Anyway, previously on a story we've definitely seen before, the refugees are now behaving themselves. Attempts to explore the lower levels of the station were cut short by vicious gardening tools. The Jedi are just starting to get the idea that the dark side may be alive and well on this space station, though the debate as to whether it's evil statues or evil plants is still open when three of those Jedi get hit with a fresh batch of traumatizing force visions. Reed Silas suddenly finds himself alone in a jungle about to be attacked by someone with a blue lightsaber. Now let us join our traumatizing force vision already in progress.
I know, right? Reeth is in danger.
Is he? Chapter 10. Reeth Silas, bless his heart, is stumbling alone through a foggy jungle landscape. Mm-hmm. And he's so sweet. He's trying to make friends with this shadowy, mysterious other Jedi who's about to attack him.
Well, he's a Jedi, so...
So his first instinct is to be like, hey, buddy. What's going on? What you doing over there? Like, fuck. Anyway, the shadowy figure attacks him, kicks him in the chest, and is about to fucking coup de grace the shit out of him when, bam, Reeth is back in the space station. All adrenaline, heart pounding, stressed the fuck out. And it says, quote, normally, he would have called on the Force to center himself, but not now. They were surrounded by darkness, a darkness that sought to terrify and confuse the Jedi. To judge by the vision Reeth had just had, it also sought to turn them against each other.
Oh. Ooh. But dark side users are so much better at predicting things than light side users.
I don't know. I feel like Reeth has got a pretty good beat on things here.
Oh, no, he does. He does. I'm just saying, you know, Palpatine was better than the rest of the Jedi at it. So.
And I think, just off the top of my head, the reason that dark side users seem to be better at the prognostication of the Force is because they don't deny or refuse to accept any of the negative outcomes.
Oh, I love that.
They don't deny the darkness. They don't refuse to look at it. They can see the whole thing.
So the Sith are addicted to positive reinforcement versus seeing things with clarity and objectivity?
No, the Jedi are.
Oh.
You said the Sith are addicted to it. You're wrong.
Same difference in my mind right now.
Okie dokie. I'm just saying that you hear the Jedi talk about how things are obscured for them by the dark side of the Force and they can't see it.
Right.
How many times have we heard a dark side user go, I can't see that, it's too light over there.
I'm blind. It's too bright in here.
That doesn't happen.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a strong argument. That's the Comec Vitus argument for the dark side actually gives you greater clarity of vision on the Force.
Oof.
Ouch. Anyway, jump to the Jedi are having a little huddle on the vessel, and they're talking about, they're like, okay, let's break it down. What do we know? Because shit's fucking weird on this station, right? This station has a darkness problem, and we cannot find the source. We're not 100% sure where it's coming from. Comec is like, the visions that we're getting are warnings. They're trying to warn us about the darkness on this station. Now, the visions could be coming from the statues, which were possibly installed on this station after the station was built to warn people away from the darkness that is on this station.
Can I make a suggestion to dark side users just really quick?
Huh.
Instead of visions and like traumatizing events, make a sign.
Just fucking literally spell it out.
like word art, something. I don't know.
Do we really think it was dark side users who were trying to warn people away from this well of darkness on the station?
You know what? Force users. Any force-sensitive people, maybe the metaphorical stuff and the abstract stuff isn't hitting as well as just making a sign.
I think the reason they go with the vague shit, with the visions, is because that's a universal language. They don't have to worry about people going, I don't know what that sign says. Anyway, doopy-doopy-doo, into the darkness.
Okay.
And this is an ancient thing. This is from a long time ago, that would have had an alphabet that maybe doesn't even exist now. And if you want a warning sign to endure, have it convey a feeling rather than a language.
So they probably would have written the signs in ye old galactic basic.
Sure. The fucking Canterbury Tales of the Galaxy Far, Far Away.
Okay. That's fair.
Okay. Anyway. So they're like, okay, let's talk about these statues. Okay. Maybe the darkness is not deeper in the station. Maybe it's actually sealed inside the statues themselves. And I think Reeth is the one who points out, actually, I don't think so, because the Force emanates from life, not from inanimate objects. And they're like, we don't know who made these idols. Could have been Jedi, could have been Sith, could have been an unknown third party. So what do we fucking do? Okay. Orla's like, well, we test it.
Right.
You either remove the statues from the station, which sounds super fun. I bet they're not heavy at all.
Right.
And like, whose ship are you going to put them on?
Yeah.
Who's going to be like, yes, give me the evil statue, please. The evil haunted statue.
Yeah, I think Geode would have a problem with evil statues being on his ship.
And how would he express that problem?
He'd tell them.
He would just stand in the middle of the hallway.
Correct.
And refuse to allow them to bring him on.
You don't have to talk to communicate.
Clearly. Anyway, so Orla's like, we either take them off the station or, you know, we destroy them.
Mm-hmm.
We could do that. And Reeth objects, not because destroying them might release the darkness into the environment, which I think is what Dez pointed out, but because those are historical artifacts. You cannot destroy history.
ding on the listen to fucking Dez, please, counter.
Oh, he gets a lot of that in this conversation.
Oh, I know.
Because Dez points out that there's a whole section of the station that they can't even get to down in the lower levels because there's like plants and angry droids and an energy field that they saw down there.
Right.
And he's like, what if the darkness is coming from down there?
Right.
Ding on the listen to Dez counter.
Yeah.
For fuck's sake. And so they're like, okay, fine. We'll do both. We will test the idols and figure out how to get past the energy field. Okay. Cool. So they assemble the exact same away team that they had last time. It's Dez, Reeth, Affy, Nan, and the random nameless Mitzi guy.
Hey, they leveled since last session, so here we go.
They did level, and most of them honestly are there because they don't want to get left out of any loot that gets found down there.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah, not the Jedi, but everybody else. That's why they're there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I love that Affy's like, okay, what's the plan? And Dez is like, let's say that we have a plan to make a plan.
Ugh, Jedi.
Like, do they teach classes in just situational improvisation?
Well, the problem is...
they're like, you're going to yes and your way through this battlefield. Go.
When Yoda is teaching that class and he's talking backwards, you're going to miss some things, you know?
Anyway, so they're getting ready to go down there and they're like, we're going to get fucking attacked again. Like, they've been carefully moving vines aside instead of hacking their way through them so that the ATs don't get all aggro, but they're like, we gotta keep going without being attacked by them. What do we do? Reeth Sylas has a light bulb moment. And he figures out the ATs, the little droids, attack when they hurt the plants. So what if we pick up these little potted flower plants and carry them? Then the ATs won't attack us because they might hurt the plants.
What Anakin Skywalker bullshit is this?
Except Anakin would have done it with a living creature.
Yeah.
He would have been like, this small child, I'm going to strap it to my chest right here. Because fuck them kids.
And Obi's like, but Anakin, the droids don't even care about the small child. They care about the plants. I'm doing it.
And Affy points out, so we're going to be holding these plants hostage then?
Yeah.
And Reeth is like, yeah, I guess we are. Anyway, everybody gets a little ride-along flower pot buddy, and they start heading towards the energy field. The droids all swarm ahead of them and turn off the energy field for them.
Wow.
To keep the plants from getting fucking burned on their way through the energy field, presumably. Cool. They get down to the lower level, and Affy Hollow presents the worst suggestion ever. She says they should split up.
Why?
Chris, when you're on a dungeon crawl, do you ever split the party?
Never. Never. Ever.
Ever. Ever. Never split the party. That's how people die.
Yeah.
Affy.
Affy plays Magic the Gathering. Not D&D.
Facts. Okay, headcanon accepted. Anyway, she wants to split up because she wants to go on her own and see if there's any more smuggler symbols down here. Because she really desperately wants to find evidence that her theory about somebody in the Bind Guild plotting against her foster mom, Scover Bind, is real. So she wants to find more of the smuggler symbols down there. She doesn't want anybody around while she does it.
My mother is not terrible.
Everyone else on this group agrees. Because of course they fucking do.
Why?
The Jedi do it because of their fucking hubris. They think they can handle anything.
Right.
Obviously, that's why they're going to split off. I think Nan and the Mitzi have their own agendas.
Oh, yeah.
So everybody wanders off to do their own thing. Affy does find some more of the smuggler code writing. And she's like, oh, I hope this is evidence with the guild members. They're plotting against my foster mom. Here I go. I'm reading it. And it looks like pilots are writing about their ships. She's trying to decode it as it goes. She's learning the language. And then she finds a particular symbol that looks like a bird of prey diving.
Wait a minute. She recognizes that symbol.
She does. We don't. We've never heard of this shit before, but she does. And it hits her like a ton of fucking bricks because that is the symbol for her biological parents' ship called the Kestrel's Dive.
What?
Yeah. It says, quote, whoever wrote this had been talking about her parents. That, or it had been written by her parents themselves.
But that's impossible. That would mean that they would have been here. And why would they be right on the space station?
Why would they be? Now, apparently they died when she was very young.
Right.
So, but I have a theory about that. We will get to it. Reeth, Silas, bless his heart, is wandering alone. It's not very interesting. But he is pondering whether the energy field was meant to protect whatever is down here or to protect them from whatever is down here.
Good thing they split up.
Good thing they just shut the energy field off without actually like looking for like a manual or a panel or getting a droid from one of their ships and plugging it into the ATs who clearly know what the fuck is going on here.
Right.
And getting some data on that. Whatever happened to plugging your droid into the space station and having them have a conversation?
I'm sure Geode suggested it.
Probably, but I think this is why nobody has a droid.
Right.
This is why there's no droids amongst any of these crews.
If you had, if R2 was here, right, he'd figure the whole thing out in like 5 minutes.
Exactly. And so that's why we have to have a glaring omission of a character. It's like when you have stories set in the modern era and you realize that like there's a lot of like running around and miscommunication going on and near misses and missed connections. And you realize this could all have been solved by a cell phone and nobody in the show has a cell phone.
Right, right.
There has to be an obvious omission of a readily available piece of technology that would have solved your plot immediately.
Right.
And now that I realize that, I'm like, all right. Okay. I see you, Claudia Gray. Droids are just the most ubiquitous fucking thing in the galaxy far, far away, but nobody has one. Come on now.
Well, come on. It's the High Republic, Steph. I got nothing.
Nobody's missing their droids right now. Yes, there is a dude over in Hetzel, as is happening right now, who has requisitioned every fucking astromech droid ever, but he can't get his hands on their droids because they're stranded in space. So they should have a droid. Anyway, I'm upset. I'm annoyed because it's very contrived that there are no droids here. Anyway, his path, Reeth's path, eventually converges with Dez's path. And they're like, oh, okay, hey, how you doing? And they are now wandering around together. And Reeth is so excited about this. His little heart just grows three sizes and goes pity-pat in his little teenage boy chest. And he thinks, quote, he felt a quiver of pride. What would his friends say? The ones who so idolized Dez Ryden. There they were, on a mission together. Partners! Exclamation Yay. Point!
Yay!
Ding on the Loden. Great Storm does not realize he is in a Star War counter.
Yeah, that's it.
Don't you fucking get excited about teaming up with somebody and being like, we're partners and this is gonna be the best day ever. Don't fucking do that. Because now that you've thought that shit, there is no way that we are not minutes away from disaster. God damn it.
How are you doing, Steph? How's it going
I'm
over there?
I'm already angry.
She's so mad already, y'all.
Fuck. Okay, so they're wandering along and they find a revolving door. How whimsical.
Yeah.
It took me so long to figure out that that's what she was fucking describing. Because she's like, it's round, it's circular, there are hinges at the top and the bottom. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, there are some moments in books where I really wish they could briefly project the image of what I'm supposed to be seeing in my brain.
Or just say revolving door.
But they don't have revolving doors, Steph, in the galaxy far, far away.
Hey, God damn it. Anyway, I'm annoyed that I had to struggle with the mental imagery on the
door.
But I'm fine. So they find a revolving door. It's closed right now. They can't see what's on the other side. So they're not completely stupid. They use the force to sense if there's anything like waiting to pounce on them on the other side of this door. There's nothing. Nothing alive anyway. So Reeth is just kind of standing there being like, oh, a door. Dez goes ahead and walks up to the door and he fails his check for traps roll.
Yep. Goes right through the door.
The door just suddenly flips. Mm-hmm. It just rotates, knocks him on his ass and traps him on the other side of the door.
Oh, no.
Reeth almost laughs at it because it was funny. That's dummy. Dez Ryden did just get knocked on his ass by a door. That was kind of funny. But he realizes very quickly, Dez is not laughing. And then the floor under Reeth's feet and the walls all around him start to vibrate.
Oh, my.
And a very bright white light starts to shine on the other side of the door. There are slits in the door and the light is shining through. And there's a sound like big machines are revving up like engines. And he hears Dez cry out in pain. So Reeth runs over to the door and that light shining through the slits damn near fucking blinds him as he tries desperately to find a way to open this door. It won't open. Everything is so bright and so loud. And then suddenly silence. Darkness. Reeth calls out to Dez to ask him if he's okay. There's no answer.
Uh-oh.
And he pushes on the door and it just opens this time. Easily. And there on the other side of the door, he sees a tunnel and no Dez. Mm-hmm. No Dez anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And he looks around and he sees helix rings. And I'm like, what the fuck are helix rings? Chris, do you have any idea what helix rings are?
I did look this up, but I closed tab. 1 second. I have a bookmarked. They are powerful energy boosters that held the equivalent of enough pure coaxium to fuel 40 to 50 starships. That's
Yay!
A lot of power.
Yeah.
I would continue to read more on them, but that would be spoiling the story.
You don't need to do that. Right.
They're really powerful. Just to kind of give you a reference point, I'm trying to confirm this, otherwise I'm going to get... Yeah, they make their first appearance in this book, so this is like a High Republic bullshit, but... I have to headcanon that this type of technology is used for wonderful, amazing things like the Death Star.
Yeah. So, Reeth, because he's a nerd and he knows things, he recognizes them. And he recognizes that they are really too powerful for anything short of hyperspace travel.
Right.
And he thinks, quote, they had a tendency to malfunction, especially when they're older, and they created energy surges capable of melting metal, blowing circuits, or ... or disintegrating a human body down to the atoms.
Oh. Is that bad?
Dez Ryden is fucking dead.
No!
He's gone. And this is the point, I think I may have talked about it on this show. I will throw a book.
Oh, yeah.
That pisses me off. I will throw a book that offends my soul. Paper books are fucking great for that. They're very forgiving. I'll fling that bitch across the room. It'll sit in the corner and think about what it just fucking did to me.
Y'all,
but I'm reading ebooks right now.
Living with Steph. Let me tell you, I have dodged Storm of Swords, the book, multiple times.
Fuck that fucking guy. So, I'm furious with this book. I can't throw it because I use ebooks now.
Right.
That book lives on my iPad. Now, my iPad's old. I've had it for like 6-7 years, maybe longer. But I'm going to throw it. I don't want to replace it. I had no other way other than blowing up our chat or venting to the patrons in Discord to get my feelings out. And they're still not out. They're here.
Yeah.
I'm fucking furious. Michael B. Jordan is dead. Anyway.
Creed, no.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful man.
Did you, okay. Sidetrack, did you know that Creed has a story? I had no idea. I've watched those movies over and over again.
It's got a fucking excellent story.
I know. Those movies are really
good.
Those
movies are really, really good.
They make me cry. Anyway, go.
Yeah, well, there's also that.
Yeah.
Okay, just the first two, though. We don't need to go beyond
that. I haven't seen the third one yet. Oh,
you
right.
Don't need to.
I know.
He has a choice of co-star that seemed right at the time.
So right, too.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Getting back into it. Okay. Chapter 11. Back on the vessel, Comac Vitus is hanging out with Leox and Geode in the cockpit, like you do.
Right.
And then Comac gets a ding on the bad feeling about this counter.
Yeah.
As, quote, a wave of panic and sorrow, one so strong it pierced Comac's consciousness like a fine silver needle.
Because cool. Remember, he's super sensitive to the Force, so...
Super sensitive. So I like he's
a
like,
sensitive man.
He goes, something's wrong, and fucking Leox, chewing on a minty spice stick. He goes, well, we live in an imperfect universe, so that's a given.
Mm-hmm.
Because Leox, ding, does not realize he's in a Star War.
Right.
And ding should listen to Dez, but in this case, Dez is Comac. When the Jedi... says something's wrong, but you cannot see anything immediately in your vicinity that's wrong, be afraid, be very afraid.
Right, right.
Saying. But he doesn't know that yet. Leox is not an experienced traveling with Jedi guy. He'll get there. Comac is like, no, I mean that something is wrong with our people. And now Leox is done being chill because something might be wrong with Affy.
Right. Even Geode and Leox even exchange glances.
Yes, yes. Worried glances.
Yeah.
Rocky, worried glances. Anyway, they go running out into the atrium. The away team are coming back. The Mitzi guy just runs off to his own people. Nan and Affy come over, and they report that Dez is gone. And Comac's like, gone what? Gone how? What are you talking about? Reeth walks up, and his face is just white.
Ugh.
He's in shock, and he just looks up at Comac. And Comac doesn't even need to ask. He already knows. And Comac thinks, quote, it has happened again, just as it happened to Master Simix. The resonance has warned me, but I did not see it in time. This part of the galaxy has claimed its price.
Ugh.
Yikes. Affy is in a lot of shock, like an excessive amount of shock. Comac notes that that's weird because she barely knew Dez. He doesn't know that she's distracted about the fact that she found her parents' symbol down there.
It's right, often. Right.
He finally gets the kids to fucking spill what happened. Something helix ring, something Dez disappeared. And Leox is there to confirm that, yeah, helix rings are bad. And he doesn't want to say the actual word. So Comac says it for him.
Yeah.
Vaporized. The likeliest explanation is that Dez Ryden was vaporized instantly.
Lisa was quick.
I mean, but it wasn't painless. We heard him scream.
Yeah.
Thanks, High Republic. I needed that. He tries to reach out to Dez in the Force. He finds nothing but silence. Okay, cool. Cut to Orla. She finds out what happened, and she steps up to take charge of the situation because Comac needs to go meditate.
Because he's so sensitive, and that puts Orla in a position where she has to be mom.
Exactly.
And she has to take care of everybody. And poor Orla.
Yeah. She actually thinks, she's pondering the fact that she has her own grief to bear. All right. But she's always been able to put her emotions aside until there was time to deal with them. Comac feels things more deeply, more immediately. Quote, his equilibrium was more difficult to maintain.
Okay.
Cool. You remember that whole dark side meditation he was doing earlier?
Yeah.
Cool.
Dean on the Anakin Skywalker red flag counter.
Yeah.
We haven't had one of those in a while. I feel like Orla's, unfortunately, one of those characters is constantly being put in a position where she has to be the one that suppresses their feelings and focuses on other people in times of trauma. Mm-hmm. And it sucks to be in that person.
Ding. On the personally attacking me personally counter.
Right, right.
Thanks. This book is getting me at both ends of my life. It's getting me, you know, teenage me and also adult mom me.
Right.
Love it. It's going to get worse here in a second. Okay. So she starts hurting the kids. She's like, everybody sit down. Is anybody hurt? No? Cool. Affy, Wreath, go get cleaned up. Get some rest because y'all look like shit. Nan, you seem weirdly less affected by this than anybody else. In fact, it kind of seems like you're putting on a sad face just for the sake of people who actually have emotions. So you go tell all the other refugees what happened.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And Nan's like, okay. She toddles off. But Orla, before she can go, Orla tells everybody, we lost a good man, a great Jedi, and we will investigate how it happened. But for now, just go quietly reflect on who Dez Ryden was and acknowledge that he is now one with the Force. Then all the kids scatter. Cool. Orla is left alone. And I'm going to read this.
Oh, God.
Quote, Orla put her head in one hand, just long enough to take a few breaths. She couldn't allow herself the same time to reflect that she'd granted Comac and Wreath, not when she had to figure out what to do with the idols. Ding! On the personally attacking me personally thing, okay? I'm mom.
Right. All right? You are.
I never have the luxury of falling apart or feeling my own feelings in the moment because it is my job to hold a safe space for everyone around me to be able to feel their feelings. I make sure the needs are met. I make sure the space is safe. I make sure everybody who needs a hug gets a hug. Needs a snack, gets a snack. Needs quiet time, gets quiet time. I make sure all of that is taken care of. And then later, in the shower maybe, where no one can see that their rock is melting, then I can have my feelings. Then I can fall apart. And y'all, if you think that's unique to me, you're incorrect. There is somebody in your life. If you're not that person, in your circle that does that, there is somebody in your circle, hopefully, who is doing that for you. Please go give them a hug. Please acknowledge that. Because let me tell you, that becomes ubiquitous in your life. That just becomes part of your environment and your background noise. And you forget. That's like part of the furniture.
And it's a thankless role sometimes, or oftentimes, I should say.
100%. That's why I'm telling you, go hug your rock, please. Yeah. Not Geode, the person in your life who is your rock. Go hug them.
I think, honestly, I'm not joking here. Just talking about the vessel crew, I think that's Geode's role.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look, Geode is a fucking semi-mobile metaphor, okay?
Yeah.
He's this, God damn it. He is a character, and as we'll see before we're done here, he fulfills the strong silent type maternal role. He's the support. He's their rock. We just went real fucking literal with it.
Yeah, right.
Ugh. Anyway, go hug your rock today. So, we move on. Affy takes a shower, and oh shit, sidebar. Did you know there are showers in Star Wars?
Yeah, we talked about it in Solo.
That implies... Right. Because it was a
Han and Chewie took a shower together, and it's like
fun,
oh my,
bonding shower. Yeah. And that was a good time. But yeah, a shower implies the existence of other things like toilets, menstrual pads, you know, all of that stuff.
Toilet paper. last part. No, George Lucas doesn't believe in that.
That's true. You can have reproduction, but not any of the other trappings that go around that process.
Right.
Anyway, Affy takes a shower. She changes her clothes. She gets out, and Leox is waiting outside the door. And she's like, what the fuck? And he's like, I'm worried about you because something more is going on here. She's all snappy. She's like, I'm fine. Okay. I just went down there with a dude who fucking died. Okay. I'm upset, but I'm fine. And he's like, no, no, there's something else going on here. You are not okay. And Affy's head is all full of like finding out that her bio parents ship, the symbol is there and she has to be wrong about it. Okay. Even though she decoded that those symbols are definitely pilots talking about their own ships, which means that her parents were there.
Uh-oh.
And so that's what she's all upset about. Quote, they wouldn't plot against Scover. I know they wouldn't. I hardly remember them, but I feel so sure.
Leox, on the other hand, he's more grounded in reality in this situation. And I love Leox so, so much because he's has this ability to try to tell the truth to somebody, but still be empathetic. Right. And not like trample all over people's feelings and be inconsiderate of them.
That's a skill that takes time to develop. There's no instinct for that.
Yeah. So anyway, Han Solo, you should have read Leox's biography.
Does Leox have a biography?
He should. I would.
All right.
I mean, come on.
Leox is fucking great. And he's trying to get to the bottom of this. And she's deeply troubled because she's really worried that her parents may have been plotting against Scover Bynd, the leader of the guild, who is now her foster mom. So pause here. I have a theory.
Okay.
Having not read any further into the High Republic than this moment right here, my theory is that Scover Bynd found out that Affy's parents were plotting against her, so she had them killed.
Oh my.
And is now raising Affy out of guilt for making her an orphan. That's my theory.
Wow.
We'll see how that pans out.
We'll see how that pans out, yeah.
Anyway, Leox is gently insisting that there is definitely something more that is upsetting Affy because he knows her too fucking well. Affy denies it. She snaps at him. She stomps away like the teenage girl she is. And she's like, God, I'm going to go to the mess hall and I'm going to get some snacks and I'm going to take them back into my bunk and I'm going to hide in there for days because fuck everything and fuck this. But she gets into the mess and there's Geode.
Ugh.
Just standing there. And Geode doesn't interrogate her like Leox did. Quote, his silent sympathy broke through where no words ever could have. She leaned her head against Geode's side and let the tears come. Patiently, he waited with her as she cried for a dozen reasons and none at all.
See? I love Geode.
How did he know that's exactly what she needed right then?
Because it's Geode.
Like,
He's Geode is ultimately an introvert, right? Introverts are better with the empathy thing than extroverts, just generally. Not always, but generally. And Geode is the ultimate introvert.
Yeah. Because of that no talking ever thing he does. I'm not saying he's not communicating, okay?
Right.
I'm acknowledging that he communicates. Okay?
Okay.
He just doesn't fucking talk.
No, he doesn't talk. No. Not every species in the galaxy far, far away talks.
He doesn't. There's not even like a psychic link. He just is. And again, it's that. Oh my God. I'm not all the way there yet. Don't you fucking start looking smug. I'm not all the way there yet. Okay? This is still that weather rock thing. Where, like, the shit that happens around the rock is obviously something the rock is telling us about. The rock is wet, therefore it's raining outside. Or it was raining, whether you put the rock out there or not. We're attributing virtues to the rock, to Geode, that are just things that happen to be. He just happens to be in the mess, and Affy happened to need a silent shoulder to cry on. And so that worked out well. But maybe he's there on purpose. Maybe he's just an extremely empathetic creature.
Yeah.
Who understands that she needed somebody to just let her let the emotions out. Rather than, and it's, you know what's fucking me up? You know what's fucking me up?
What?
Geode did what I would have done.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many times I've had an upset teenager raging around my house, and I'm standing in the kitchen because that's my default setting. If I'm not at this computer, I'm in my kitchen.
Right.
Because of who I am as a person. Side note, I'm making apple pie today, and I'm very excited.
Oh, I want it. Sorry.
You cannot have it, but I will send you pictures of food you can't eat. Ha 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 ha. But I can't tell you how many times I'll have a teenager stomping around my house. I'm standing in the kitchen and I see them and I just hold out my arms.
Mm-hmm.
And they come in. We hug. I say nothing. because there is nothing I can say that's not going to make it worse, because that's the state they're in, and I'll wait until the storm passes. So the fact that Geo did what I would have done in that situation is fucking me up right now, because he's a rock. And I'm starting to feel like some kind of a fucking close-minded bigot person, because I keep calling him a rock, but he's a fucking rock.
Look, Affy does not think he's a rock, and neither does Leox. The Jedi started this story off thinking this was a big joke that they were playing on them. And you know what? Affy thinks Geode is real enough to get to cry on his shoulder. You don't just do that with anybody.
I hate that you have a point.
I know. I do that from time to time. Once in a blue moon, it happens.
I'm not all the way there yet, but this fucking, that moment, that was a big step towards the Geode side. God damn it. Anyway, cut to Reeth Sylas, who's doing something stupid.
Yeah.
He's getting suited up in a full adventuring kit because he's going back down there.
By himself.
Alone. He's sneaking. And nobody sees him go because the vessel people are all occupied and the atrium is empty because, quote, after what happened to Dez, nobody from the other refugee ships had any interest in exploring further.
Yep, correct.
Yeah, because something down there is capable of killing a space monk wizard.
In like a second, and not just killing. Oh no,
gone.
Not shooting, not cutting, vaporizing. That's fun. That's fun.
Yeah, they don't want shit to do with it. If the people who can fucking fly and have laser swords are dying down there, we don't want... Fuck that.
Yeah, yeah.
We will not be down there. Anyway, he gets all the way back down, because he's still got his pet plant. He gets all the way back down to the tunnel where Dez disappeared, and he sees like a light flashing around in the tunnel.
Uh-oh.
And he's like, what the fuck is that? He sneaks in and surprises Nan. Nan is down there.
She went by herself too?
Yeah.
And she's not a space wizard?
What the fuck is she doing down there? Mm. Well, she's like, something's not right about Dez's death. We've got to investigate it. And Reeth fucking buys that bullshit.
What do you mean?
It's bullshit. She's down there poking around for the exact same reason that she was fine with splitting up the party earlier. Nan has another agenda. I wouldn't be surprised if she's in there and she's like, show me how the kill a Jedi immediately machine works. Because somebody I work for would love to have that information. Because she's a Nihil.
Wow. That's way harsh.
Look, I admire the hustle, okay? I admire what she's doing. She has got Reeth Sylas wrapped all the way around her little finger, okay? But she's bad. She's evil. She's wrong. She has another agenda. Anyway, so they team up to continue investigating. They keep looking through the tunnels because they're watching out for helix rings, and I think they find more down there.
Yeah, it sounds like there's multiple.
Cool. Reeth points out that they don't know what the rings are for, and quote, maybe Dez was transported somewhere else or taken farther down to an even lower level that we haven't found yet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. Reeth is holding out hope.
Which, I'm like, there are teleporters in Star Wars?
Since fucking when? Or if there were, where have they gone? Is this an Event Horizon thing where you can teleport, but you have to go through a hell dimension first, and that's why the darkness has invaded this place? That's my theory. Anyway, they're walking around. The silence gets to be too much. Reeth starts chatting Nan up about how she ended up with Haig for a guardian. And she's like, my parents died.
Aww.
But, quote, it's okay. My parents died well. They did their duty.
What's that duty?
Right. And Reeth is like, oh, that must mean they're military. I am too polite to continue inquiring. Meanwhile, I'm like, since when do Nihil have kids? Since when are there families in the Tempests? Since fucking when?
Maybe in Pan Ada's Tempest?
Oh, I could see that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He'd be like, yes, raise the little monsters. apparently Haig is like a retired strategist commander of some kind, and like, yeah, because he's secretly an HK assassin droid. That's why.
Oh wow.
Yeah. No, I have theories. I have
wow,
so many.
You are coming for Nan. Poor Nan.
No. No sympathy for the devil. She's bad.
She has done nothing wrong in this book so far.
She has flown every red flag I need. Anyway, they find another door. It is big and black and scary, and they barely take a second to exchange a glance before they run right up to the fucker and start poking at it. Like, what? We learned nothing. Nothing. Fucking book characters. Anyway. they figure out this is an airlock because they can feel how cold it is because the void of fucking space is on the other side of it. And Reith calls upon his education from the Starship Repair 101 class and says, quote, to me, this looks like it was once a launching station for smaller transit pods. The rings probably powered the pods to leave the station and their own engines would kick in once they cleared the airlocks. And Nan takes it to the next logical step, which is, and Dez got in without a starship, but the tunnels launched him anyway.
See, he didn't get vaporized.
Yeah. So then Reith spends an entirely too long paragraph contemplating exactly what it would have been like for Dez to be physically ejected from the space station into open space and die feeling his lungs freeze and expand inside his chest in the vacuum of the void. And no, thank you. No. No, thank you. I don't like any of that. So much worse.
Y'all, on video, Stephanie literally pointed everywhere as if she's blaming the universe for everything she just read. And I love that.
Because I don't have Claudia Gray here to shake my finger in her face.
You!
You did this to me. Anyway, that's all really grim. They're very subdued. They're done here. They go back up to the atrium to hear the sounds of celebration.
What?
Which seems really ghoulish to them.
Yeah.
But no, everybody up there is cheering. Not everybody. Not the Jedi, not Leox, but like all the refugees are cheering because the goddamn hyperspace lanes are open again.
That's great.
I mean, it's limited. It's just the route back to Coruscant.
Yeah, get your ass back home.
But hey, it's open again, so hold the fuck up. You mean to tell me, Claudia Gray, look me in my eyes and tell me that if they had just, I don't know, waited an hour, then they might have gotten the word that the lanes were open and then been too busy helping with the exodus from the space station to go down there and Dez Redden might be alive right now?
Right.
Fuck the High Republic. God damn it! I hate it. I mean, I love it. Obviously, I'm invested, and I'm in the story, or whatever, but God!
I've never seen you this angry over anything we've
so
covered.
So pissed!
I mean, we covered some serious shit in Marvelous Divas about women being secondary and you know, all that kind of stuff, and you've never been this angry before.
Book characters hit me harder.
Yeah.
They just fucking do. Okay.
Wow.
But it's okay, because we don't need to sit in this frustration, because we could just jump back to 25 years earlier.
Yeah, we're gonna...
I hate the flashbacks!
I don't like the flashbacks, I'm sorry. Yeah,
they're clumsy, and like, I get it, I get the parallels, we've already discussed it. Like, Comac has even called it out in his current timeline brain, that the parallels exist. We don't need to keep doing this, but we're gonna keep doing this. I don't like it.
Yeah, so Orla's chopping up some snakes.
Okay, so yeah, we are fighting a big-ass white snake in a cave. And the fucking description of the snake. Okay, I want to hit this real quick. All right, we're going to get through this fast because I don't like it. But the description of the snake, okay, quote, its mouth opened wide, revealing three huge fangs and a throat already rippling in anticipation of prey.
I wasn't sure if I should be grossed out or...
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah.
Okay, same. Yeah. Same. Anyway, three jodel? What? Don't fucking try to read and talk at the same time, guys. It's a problem. Three Jedi, total of four lightsaber blades between them. They fucking kill the snake. It's instantly dead. Okay. Baby Comac is still beating himself up about the fact that his master died or whatever. And they left his body behind like it was nothing. And Comac reminds himself, it is nothing. His body is nothing. It is crude matter. Master Simix himself is one with the Force. Crude matter. Fucking Yoda is everywhere.
Right.
That's a Yoda thing. Yoda will tell you that you are the Force. You are not this crude matter, this flesh. And like, okay. Okay, whatever. This whole time, Orla's master Laird has been meditating and mentally mapping the tunnels around them, finding a route to for them to go free the hostages that are down there, because we're still doing the mission, for fuck's sake. And they're off. They're going to go find them. Meanwhile, for some reason, we cut over to Isimer, the Lasat who kidnapped the rulers of these two planets. Blah, 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 dastardly kidnapping plot, blah. It's more the same from the last flashback. The Hutts want to poison the chances of Iram and Arano ever trusting the Republic, so they hired Isimer and his crew to engineer a situation where the planets would have to call the Republic for help, so then they could fuck up the Republic trying to help them, and then the planets would never call the Republic again, which is dumb, because Iram and Arano had already rejected the Republic before this happened.
Right.
They were not going to do it.
Look, I'm not hot for Lasat in this case. I'm just not.
It's a dumb plan.
It's a dumb plot.
It's a contrivance.
Yeah.
Just to traumatize these Jedi in the past so that they can be PTSD in their current story. I don't, like, it's in my notes in all caps, why do we even have this side plot? Anyway, the kidnapped rulers of Iram and Arano are trauma bonding. They're totally going to end up forging a peace between their planets if they survive this. Whatever. The only part about this that I find interesting is the part with baby Orla.
Oh, gosh.
So she's fighting a snake by herself.
Yeah.
While her master and Comac are fighting another snake. She's by herself. She's doing fine because Orla's a little badass.
Yeah.
And she's like wondering. It's like she has time. She's so relaxed in this fight. She has time to ponder, like, if they're a carnivorous species, how are they surviving on this planet with no other animal life? But cannibalism never occurs to her. She's so cute.
I love her.
Anyway, she kills the snake, but she feels bad about it because it was just a beast hunting for food.
It was hungry, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, she didn't want to be food. It was a me or him situation. She killed the snake. Master Laird and Comac kill their snake, and Master Laird turns to Orla and tells her she did good, but she could do better.
And I hate Master Laird.
What the fuck? You needed help to kill your snake. Orla did fine by herself, but you need to tell her that she could do better? I don't like Master Laird.
I don't like... No, I don't.
I feel like Orla grew up fine in spite of Master Laird.
I agree. Well, I think there's a reason why Orla is leaving the Order.
Yeah. Well, because there's this moment, right? Because Orla's like, I was just following my instincts and I lived. I won.
Yeah.
What do you want? And, but that's what she wanted to say. But instead, out loud, she's like, okay, I'll remember to use my training next time. I'm sorry. You're right. I suck. And they start moving on, but Orla's whole brain is full of thinking about, if the Force speaks to me through my instincts, why am I not supposed to listen?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Master Laird, what the fuck? Why isn't she supposed to listen to her instincts? Anyway, that was a totally smooth moment in the middle of this book that didn't seem clunky or redundant at all. And that's the end of what we're reading today. I'm still mad. That's part of the problem. Maybe I would have a more favorable viewpoint on these flashbacks if I wasn't pissed going into reading this one.
Well, we didn't have favorable reviews of the previous ones either. So, and I have to say, again, the Iram Arano thing, I don't give a fuck.
It's dumb. They didn't need to kidnap anybody. Iram and Arano didn't want shit to do with the Republic anyway. They said that at the beginning.
Right.
Like, the fact that the Jedi got called at all, they're like, ooh, we can reach out to this fucking planets that don't want anything to do with us.
After I read Phase 2 of the High Republic, I had a headcanon fantasy where Palpatine's like, you know, we need to test Death Star and some planets. Like, I really don't care.
I don't give a fuck.
And I'm sorry for those of y'all that like Phase 2. There is great writing, great characters. It's just, I just really don't care. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Anyway, so that is as far as we read today. That's the end of Flashback Part 3. Next time, we will start up with Chapter 12. Yeah?
Yep.
Exciting. Do you have anything 12, 13, else for today?
14, you think?
I predict nothing.
But we're not going to be because we're...
Oh, right.
Yeah, so y'all, next week is Thanksgiving.
True.
As of this recording. Mm-hmm. So we won't be recording next week. So we're going to skip a week and we'll get back right into it.
Right. Our next recording will be, yeah, the next week. So
right.
That's all. We're right. Just going to skip a week like we do. And then you can watch us struggle to remember how to do this podcasting thing.
Because that's what happens when you skip a week.
Every time. But we got to skip because the holidays, baby. I got to do Sidesgiving.
Yeah, I know. I'm planning my menu. I've ordered the... I keep going back and forth on turkey or turducken.
Turkey is bullshit.
I love turkey. What are you talking about?
I'm doing ham.
Okay, that's fine too. Ham. There's something wrong. Ham! But turducken is so good.
Okay, let's move on. I'm taking right back to the gay porn situation with the turducken, and we've, you know what, that is well-trodden territory in our discussions. We don't need to go back. Okay, so we have nothing else.
Somebody's having lamb for Thanksgiving. That's a good idea.
Somebody in our chat?
Yeah.
Nice. Ooh. Sure.
I've never thought about lamb before.
Look, if I don't make a ham, though, there will be a riot in my house. Make the ham. Yeah. Lucas makes his fucking signature homemade baked mac and cheese. It's goddamn delicious.
Oh, my God.
Oh, girl. Anyway, okay. God, I'm so
what
hungry.
What you mean you eat no meat?
Let us wrap up this episode, shall we?
Yep.
Okay, you ready? You ready to outro?
Yep.
Okay. Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. We appreciate that, and we appreciate you. If you enjoyed the music at the top of the episode, you absolutely should. That was a gift to the show from one of our listeners by the name of Chorlzy. Fun fact, Chorlzy is actually an up-and-coming recording artist. His first single, Rosalie, will be released on December 8th. If you go to his social medias at Chorlsy, he will have links and sneak peeks there. So go
Yay.
Check him out. He's precious, you guys. We love Chorlzy. If you want to hang out with us in between episodes, you totally can. We are on all the social medias. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok as @DarkSideDivas.
Also, if you haven't done so already, please subscribe to our podcast via your favorite podcast platform of choice. Leave a review, especially if it's on Apple or Spotify. Those are the two platforms where most people listen to us, and I guess that's where we have all our reviews that I can see. we also have a YouTube channel. If you go to search for Dark Side Divas and subscribe, we are going to be doing more stuff there very soon. We are already going to be doing Baldur's Gate playthroughs, and we may have some special announcements to make on our next Baldur's Gate playthrough, which I'm afraid of because Stephanie murdered me last time. So we'll see if I get murdered again.
I didn't murder anyone.
No, the trap did. The trap that you walked, you're like, hey, press that button, and you ran out of the room. Should have known. also, we have a swag store, redbubble.com/officialdivas. You can buy t-shirts, stickers, mugs, etc. of our logos and the funny shit that we say. And last but certainly not least, we have a Patreon, patreon.com/divaspodcast. For $5 a month, you can view our special content, unedited versions of our podcast, which we also now do live. There are people in our chat that are awesome, that are fun to interact with. And last but certainly not least, we have a great Discord community that you can access through the Patreon. It is the greatest Discord community in all the galaxy.
It is true. They're awesome and smarter than us. Okay, is that it? Are we done?
That's it.
All right, then we say goodbye.
Bye.